Possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming the new energy of musicians Laurie Anderson and Bang on a Can All-Stars, dancers Rennie Harris and Ralph Lemon, and the theatrical productions Forbidden Christmas and Aladdin during the 2004-2005 performance season. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com. AM 580 thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program once again Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the show every month. It's always a Monday, 10 o'clock hour. We offer you the opportunity to call in and ask questions about the single-family home, the things that can go wrong, and how to get them fixed. Maybe also you're thinking about changing some things, doing some remodeling. If you have questions about the basement or the attic, things like siding, insulation, windows, doors, shingles, what have you, gutters, some kind of problem, you need some advice, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana. The number, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call, and we'll get in as many people as we possibly can. The lines are starting to fill up here, so if you call and you get a busy signal, please just hang on there. Wait until we get a few of the folks here on the air, and then we'll be happy to take your call. Thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
Anything in particular at this point of the year you want to be thinking about? Is it too soon to start thinking about winter?
No, not well, if you're going to do anything drastic like replace a furnace, no, it's not. Beyond that, this being an unusual year, check the air conditioner filters. You may still have some air conditioning to do yet the next 2 months.
I think like probably that. So. I think probably so.
We can't be that lucky. So check filters on your air conditioner, that sort of thing. And, look forward to the fact that you're going to have to be sure that we have drainage away from the house during the wintertime, so gutters, downspouts, and so on.
All right. Well, we have calls. The lines are full. We'll start right in. The first in line is someone listening in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning, Hank.
Good morning.
Hank, with the cooler weather now, I have a periodic problem that occurs at this time of the year, and that is a squeaky red oak floor in the hallway between the bedroom and bathroom, right outside the bathroom door. And the red oak is over pine boards and over a crawl space. Anything I can do to...
Well, yes, there are a number of things you can do. You go down in the crawl space. I was afraid it was going to be on second floor. If you go down in the crawl space, they can be fastened from the bottom. There's a couple of... commercial units, one of them works under the trade name Squeakender, that you go down there and drive some screws into the floor joists and up into the flooring, and this usually takes care of it.
Where could I obtain this?
I would imagine places like Menards, Lowe's, this type of thing should handle them. I've never looked for one there, but I see no reason why they shouldn't.
Okay, and so you just fasten the underflooring, put a screw, the underflooring.
Yeah, well, you're going to go long enough screw so you get up into the oak flooring as well. But it all depends. If you have somebody walk above it and see where it is moving, because the squeak is wood moving on a nail. And, all right, so where is it lifting up that you can now push down so you get the squeak?
Yes.
So if it's between the pine flooring and the joist, then you just use short enough screws to go into the pine. If we are actually running into problems of the oak flooring sliding on the nails that hold it to the pine, then you've got to go with longer screws.
So just experiment and have my wife look down, be sure I'm not going too far with too long a screw.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you, Hank.
All right, thanks for the call. I would think that would be an important issue because flooring can't be that thick. You need a screw that's going to be long enough to go to anchor into the floor, but not so long that it's going to point's going to come up on the other side, and you're going to find it with your bare foot.
Right. You know, you can, if it is between the two floorings, you can use essentially a finishing nail and drive down through so it holds the two floors together.
Uh-huh.
But very often it is between the floor joist and the subfloor.
And the subfloor. So then you don't have to go up into the one that was on the top.
Yeah, but you end up laying in the crawl space while somebody walks across the top and see where it moves.
Okay. All right, hope that helps. Let's go to next caller, Lovington, line two. Hello.
Hi, I've got a building that goes into the side of another building, and it's got wood siding on it, and the wood siding is right next to the roof shingles. On the other building, the wall height is high enough the entire roof butts into the siding.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to handle that, to try to keep the water out of that wall?
About the only thing you can do is to pull enough siding so that you can put in a step flashing between the roof. Does the end of the shingles go in or the go with the slope?
Well, it's been re-shingled. Yeah, the shingles just butt right up against the siding.
Okay, when they put in the shingles, they should have put in a flashing that went under the shingles and behind the siding.
Gotcha.
And one of the things that often happens is the carpenter decides to show how good he is, and he gets this tight joint. Actually, you should be able to see a half an inch of the flashing.
All right.
The siding should be a half an inch above the roof.
Gotcha.
But if you're running the ends of rows of shingles, there has to be a piece of flashing for every row of shingles that goes up in there. A continuous flashing is virtually guaranteed to leak.
All right. Well, sounds like I got a lot of fun.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Next caller is in Lafayette, line four. Hello.
Hello. About the plastic to cover the surface of a crawl space, does it matter if it's a clear or a black film or a plastic tarp?
The only difference is if you have sunlight coming in, it better be black.
Mm-hmm. Well, not in the crawl space.
Well, you'd be surprised how often we find the clear plastic has deteriorated by sun shining in the crawl space vent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only thing. The only difference between the black and the clear is sunlight resistance.
Okay. But otherwise, even a plastic tarp?
Sure.
Okay.
No problem.
Main question is the little drain ditch that you've described many times under the drip space of the roof, backfilled with, it's got the plastic pipe in it, corrugated and perforated,
right,
and backfilled with stone, but it started. It's collecting mud in and out of the pipe, and I'm afraid of that pipe blocking up. How do I deal with the mud in that?
Well, I'm wondering where the mud is coming from. In other words, generally speaking, if you have water dripping in from the top, we hope it isn't raining mud.
Yeah. Well. Actually, the water into it isn't so much from the roof. It even has a gutter on it. It's at the bottom, though, of a slope of ground.
Okay. About the only thing I can suggest on that is that you're probably going to have to wrap this tile with landscape fabric. You know,
I got that.
And the mud won't go through that.
And the mud still came, up to that, and it's still filling the trench some with mud.
It will be getting the trench, but if your tile is covered with landscape fabric, it won't get in the tile.
Good. Could I lay some of the fabric right over the top so it wouldn't get in the trench at all? And
yes.
If so, how would I anchor it?
Well, okay, you'll have to anchor it with another little layer of rock, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that should take care of it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Next is line 3. Caller's in Aurora. Hello.
Yes. Hi. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to talk to you, Hank. I'm hopefully going to have a new furnace put in. The man that's doing the work is a very good guy to do it. I mean, I trust him, etc. But he does not want to put an efficiency furnace in. He wants to put a regular furnace in. He said he put it in his house, and it's fine. You do not need an efficiency furnace.
Well, I'm not sure how he's defining efficiency. Right now, the federal standard doesn't allow the manufacturer of anything less than 78% efficient.
Oh, 78%?
Yeah. Now, the higher efficiencies, the 90 to 95%, may not be justifiable if your house is reasonably well insulated.
Which it isn't.
Which it isn't. Okay.
No.
Well, it probably would pay to have the higher efficiency then because you use the furnace more. And the difference in efficiency, how much difference does he say there would be in cost between the two?
Are you asking me a question?
Yes.
You know, I don't know the prices as yet. I've been trying to talk to him all summer about this, and I have to get to it now.
Yeah. Well, I would guess if the difference between a 78% and a 92% was more than $700, then I'd probably go with the less expensive one. If it's less than $700 and you have a rather poorly insulated house, I would go with the higher efficiency.
Okay. And the other thing I wanted to ask is, how can I'm going to have a roof repaired. How can I tell if the roofer says, yes, you need a house, you need your roof repaired?
Well, what kind of a roof is it, asphalt shingles?
I don't know anything about it. What should I know?
Well, the...
All I know is it hasn't been done in years, and I don't even know when it was replaced.
Okay, well, if I had pictures of it, I could tell you, but over the phone, I can't.
Do you think that it could be as many as 15 years or maybe 20 years?
More than that. Yeah. I would think 20, 25.
Okay, the average life of an asphalt shingle roof is about 20 years, plus or minus. If you have asphalt shingles and it is more than 20 years old, it probably needs another layer. If there's two layers there already, they need to be stripped off and you go back to the roof sheathing and start over.
And I should put on asphalt?
That is the most economical roofing. In other words, cost per year.
Thank you much.
Okay. Other questions are certainly welcome. Our guest this morning is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on the program every month. On a Monday, we talk about home maintenance, home improvement issues. You have some problem and you need to get a little advice, I know Hank will help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have that toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. We'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. Just asphalt shingles, as you say, I think probably are the most commonly used. There are other things, but that's the most common used.
And the cost per year of having this, they don't last as long as some other things, but they're less expensive. The cost per year of a standard asphalt shingle is probably the lowest cost that you can choose. They now have asphalt shingles that are guaranteed for 30 or 35 years. With the difference in cost, you're probably still just as well off with the 20-year one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's go on to someone in Urbana. Line 1. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I've got a radon question.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm calling for my mother who lives in Bloomington, and she's listening right now to hear what you have to say. She recently did a home test for radon in her basement, and it came up with a score of 11, and what she got warned her anything over 4 should be dealt with in some way.
Okay.
She's got a finished basement with a concrete floor, and then she's got 2 crawl spaces. One of them is just soil, not covered with any kind of vapor barrier, and the other one's got gravel on it, and it's used for storage.
Okay, well, definitely both of them, soil and gravel, should be covered with plastic.
Okay.
Probably the radon is coming out of that crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
And
would that be the first thing to do?
That would be the first thing to do. Absolutely.
Try to put the plastic down and then test
it again, assuming that this finished basement is used regularly. Otherwise, it's one of those things where the EPA has come up with this magic number of 4, which has no scientific basis whatsoever. As far as I can tell, it was plucked out of midair by the EPA because there would be enough houses in violation to justify their budget.
Okay.
In other words, nothing under 15 scares me.
Okay.
Now, there are places where there are high radon levels and definitely something needs to be done, but I certainly cannot get excited about anything under 15.
Okay. She also had, I don't know who the contractor was, but somebody had occasion to be in her basement this summer and looked at her crawl space and said something about moisture. I guess that's a concern. That's definitely a concern.
That's definitely a concern, and that's where the plastic comes in.
Right.
Now, if there is plastic under the gravel, you know, sometimes we run into that.
I'm pretty sure there's not.
Okay, in that case,
it's been like that since the 50s, and I don't think they really thought about it.
Right. In that case, run probably 6 mil polyethylene over the entire surface, lap it up the walls a little bit. If it falls back off the walls, that doesn't hurt anything because any moisture coming through the wall will still go under it.
Mm-hmm.
And lap the joints 6 or 8 inches. They don't have to be taped or anything of that sort.
Okay.
But cover the entire crawl space, and I think you will notice a tremendous difference in the house, particularly in the wintertime.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Next is Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a concrete slab front porch that's 26 feet long and about 64 inches wide,
mm-hmm.
which was installed without sufficient fill, I guess, back 25, 30 years ago, and has cracked and sagged.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the treatment done some years ago where they drill holes in it and pump in so as to raise it,
mm-hmm.
which worked for a while, but it has now sagged very slightly again, although it's been stable over the last, I would guess, 7 or 8 years, has not sagged any further, but it has some small cracks in it, and I would like to have it fixed. And my question is it possible, since I believe the foundation walls are still sound and straight, is it possible to simply put a new slab, an additional slab of 3 to 2 inches, over that to cover it, or would the whole thing have to be broken up? And
two or three inches is a little thin. 4, I would buy.
I see. Another, and that would be safe, and you could grade it somewhat. It now sags slightly toward the house so that the mm-hmm. drainage is the wrong way, and I would like, of course, to have the rain run off
under
the porch.
Right. Yeah, I think you could do that, and I don't know how much foundation do you have showing above the slab?
About, I would guess, a foot, foot and a half.
Well, you might even be able to stick a few short pieces of rebar into the foundation so it will tie it so it can't move.
I see. But this all could be done, I intend to have it done professionally. A professional would be able to do that sort of job.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, I guess that answers my question. Thank you very much.
All right, very good. On to someone on a cell phone. They're next here, line number 3. Hello.
Hi. I have a question in regard to cedar shake roofing. Our house has a cedar shake roof, and with the winds that have come off, or with the winds that have caused some of the shingles to come off in the last couple of months, and given the fact that the roof itself is 18 years old, I'm sort of wondering, first of all, if there's someone that you know of locally that sort of specializes in helping to maintain cedar shake roofs. And the second thing is that there's a fellow down the street from us who spent $7,000 actually on his cedar shake roof, which is even a little older than ours, had it treated, I think, by an outfit out of Indianapolis, where they come in and they strip the roof down and then go in and replace shingles that they say are weak and so forth and so on. And they claim that that extends the roof by about 10 years. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but he spent $7,000 on that, and I'm sort of thinking, well, you know, he spent $7,000 for that, and probably a new roof would have been somewhere maybe in the $10,000-$12,000 range. And so I guess what I'm wondering is if you know, if you have a guesstimate for how one can evaluate, okay, plunking down X number of thousands of dollars to repair a shake roof and extend its longevity as opposed to replacing it.
Okay, one thing I want to be sure of, we're talking about hand-split shakes, not sawn cedar shingles.
Yeah, I believe these are the old-fashioned ones that are supposed to last for, say, around 30 years or more.
Okay. Much depends upon the condition of the shakes. One of the things that we do is go up on the roof and try and pinch the end of the shingle.
Uh-huh.
And if it crumbles in for more than, a half inch or something like that, then we're getting close to the end of the life. If it's pretty solid, then we can justify going in and doing the repairs. And there are preservative solutions that you can spray onto the roof.
Do you know anyone who does that?
K&R Painting has done that in a number of houses here in town.
Ah, okay.
But that does tend to extend the life. We also tend to look, you know, these split shakes have interlayment felts on them.
Right.
And we want to check the condition of those interlayment felts to be sure that they were put in right. Probably half of them in town have been put in incorrectly.
Uh-huh.
And so... Well, that's one of the things that we check. But if you would like us to come out and check it, I'd hate to solicit business on them.
No.
Give my office a call, and we can schedule a quick look.
Okay. And is there anyone that you know of that, say, does the replacement of the shingles that have come off with these high winds?
Yes, I can give you a list of people that I would trust to do that.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks for your help.
Well, thanks for the call. We're already here at our midpoint for this hour of Focus 580. Hank Spies is our guest from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's been doing this show with us for a long time here, coming by every month, always on a Monday, to talk about home improvement and to try to help you out. And if you need some advice, you have a question, all you have to do is give us a call. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, let's keep on going here. The next caller is in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I do gardening for a living, and one of the yards that I work on is at near the intersection of Windsor and Neal. And there is a really strong ammonia smell in one of the places in the garden that I work. And I was wondering if you had any guesses as to what that might be from.
Not offhand. Ammonia, I suppose, could be a leak from a sanitary sewer, but it would certainly be soft and wet there if that was the case.
It's not soft and wet.
No, that's outside my expertise.
Do you know who I might call to find out?
Try your county extension people.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, there you go. Let's go to Chicago, line four. Hello.
Hello, good morning. I'm going to put one of those stick and peel and stick vinyl tiling on my basement concrete floor, the laundry room area. And I was told I need this product. It's an acrylic adhesive. I don't know if it's okay to say it's like NA 4305. And I just wanted to know, what's the process? Do you clean the concrete floor first, then put down this stuff and then the tiles?
Yes. That's basically it.
Does it go on thickly, or?
I'm not familiar with that specific product.
That's acrylic adhesive.
Yeah.
It
should come, the instructions with it should indicate how big a notch is you put in the trowel. Usually this is spread with a trowel with notches in the edge, so it leaves little ridges of the adhesive. And the instructions that come with it should tell you what size notches to use.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks. So if you're using a tile that's got adhesive on it,
if
you
it
also
has
have to?
No, you no. don't have to. I'm assuming okay. this is tile that is not self-stick tile.
Okay.
But if you're putting adhesive down by itself, yeah, this you use a notch trowel to spread it with.
Okay. And that's, if you've ever seen people do this on TV, on the home improvement shows, it's a kind of a thick paste travel it on, and what you use as a tool. So what you get is like little ridges through the stuff, and mm-hmm. then you put your tile down on top of that.
Right.
Okay. Is it difficult? You know, can your average person do that and have it look decent? Is it harder than it looks like it should be to do that?
Well, it's a little harder than it looks like, and if you get too much adhesive down, then it starts oozing up in the joints between the tiles.
That's what I would worry about. Yes.
This is why you have to use the size notch trowel that they suggest for the product. If it's self-adhesive, you should not need to put this down at all.
Okay. What is there much difference in how long you should expect those tiles to stick if you use the adhesive that you spread or you use tiles that have adhesive on them?
It all depends on the moisture conditions, usually.
Okay.
So what affects the adhesive capabilities? Definitely the self-stick ones, you've got to have a lot smoother surface.
Okay. So anything in there is going to telegraph through?
It's going to telegraph through.
Okay. So that might be one thing that you would want to consider if you're choosing one or the other.
Right.
All right. Two other callers here. Let's see. Urbana, line number two.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm calling because we're doing a lot of work around the house, including trimming around the windows. And what we would like to know is, our storm windows are very old, maybe over 30 years old. Should we replace them or repaint the aluminum?
I see no reason for replacing them. As long as they're fitting right and move easily and so on, I would certainly repaint them.
Okay, great. That's all I had to ask. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And another Urbana person on line one. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. I had a question on termites.
Okay.
I have a new house with a poured foundation, a new office with a concrete block foundation, and I keep a visual look out, but I haven't done anything for termites, and I'm a little leery of the little traps, and then you have to pay for a big service contract, and I remember old Phil Nixon said that there were some new, and this was a couple years ago, new barriers on the market, which Durzvan proved not to be. Do you have any advice for treating the termites?
No, I was going to refer you to Phil Nixon.
Oh, okay.
he's the specialist in that area, he's the one I call when I have a termite problem.
Well, I'll have to wait till he's on.
Okay. Well, you can call his office at the university.
Well, I enjoy listening to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. We certainly have time for other questions. If you'd like to talk with our guest, Hank Spies, you give us a call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. And we'll save you some money on the call if that would be a long-distance call for you. That's 800-222-9455. We were talking a little bit earlier about roofing, and we talked about the fact that for your asphalt shingles, that's probably the what's most common and most economical.
Common, yes.
And that your advice is that if you're thinking about having a new roof and you're getting your estimates on your asphalt shingles, the guy comes along and says, well, okay, here's your standard shingle, and we think that it'll maybe be good for maybe 20 years, but you can upgrade, and for a little bit more money, you can have one, and we'll tell you that one will last for 30 years maybe. Mm-hmm. And your feeling is that, well, maybe you just go ahead and get the standard shingle and
most
not
of the 30-year shingles that I have seen do not look to me like they're going to last 30 years.
Ah, okay.
And, yes, they warrant them. However, you realize that this is a prorated warranty. In other words, if you get 25 years out of it, this means they will give you one-sixth of the cost. The cost of the shingles, not installing them. So by the time you figure out what this is, this warranty is roughly worth the paper it's written on.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, I have not been impressed by the performance of these 30- and 40-year shingles. Now, they do have a different appearance. You have sort of a so-called architectural appearance. In other words, they've got thick pieces stuck on them and so on, so it doesn't look the same as a standard shingle. And if you're willing to pay that price for appearance, great. But generally speaking, in terms of the economics of the situation, the 20-year asphalt shingle is still probably the best bargain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to realize that we occasionally have quality control problems with asphalt shingles. Remember, these things wholesale for roughly 5 cents a pound. How much quality control do you get on a product that sells for 5 cents a pound? And occasionally we run into problems, but not nearly as often as you might expect.
Okay. I have someone on a number of other callers here. Lines have filled up again, and we'll go first to someone on a cell phone. Line number one. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a cedar siding running vertical in a house that's about 35 years old, and I painted it stained it about 15 years ago, and I'm staining it now, and a lot of the nails are pulling out. Is there anything I can do to
put a punch on them and knock them back in?
Okay, just put a longer sinker in maybe.
Well, that bigger. Might be the problem with them pulling out is they probably didn't hit the peaks that they were supposed to hit behind it. And
okay.
It's just into the sheathing. If it's hit into a 2x4, it shouldn't come out.
Okay. I've got another thing, too, on the windows. I've got, like, little clips on the bottoms of springs.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like an L-shaped clip.
Yeah.
And some of those are broke off. Can you recommend a hardware store or someplace where I could find replacements? I mean, they're 35 years old, too, or
well,
40 years old.
All right. There are two mail-order places that I know of that claim they have parts for every window made in the last 100 years in this country.
Oh, okay. Where would that?
Both of them are located in Pennsylvania. Not having access to my computer here in the studio, I can't run you addresses offhand, but if you'll call my office, we can get it for you.
Okay, what's your office number again?
356-5048.
5048. Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank Bye. You. And we'll go next to someone in Niles. Line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to ask, could you advise me, I'm looking at a modular home,
mm-hmm.
and I'm concerned, and my wife perhaps even more so, in terms of air quality for a modular versus a stick home. And that's due to allergies that we have, et cetera. That's where the concern is coming from, especially formaldehyde and the concerns of that with press board. And so could you help us out as to whether that would what your thoughts are, as well as would that be an additional expense in a normal inspection?
Probably. You know, I haven't tested for formaldehyde for some time since we got rid of the formaldehyde insulation. But basically, yes, formaldehyde is given off by some of the press boards and so on, and it's the same board that are using in both stick-built and modular homes.
So you can't get away from it.
You can't really get away from it. There are some modular home companies that probably can do you a special at a greater cost using a different material.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have to be what happens in a stick-built home, too. We're going to have to use some different things, special boards that are designed to use without formaldehyde. They aren't made with formaldehyde.
And is the air quality check, if I can call it that, is that also something which is generally part of a inspection that you might want to have done for peace of mind? Or is that something you would pay somebody an additional fee?
Definitely would be an additional fee.
It would be an additional fee.
Yes.
Okay. Well, those were my concerns then.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Let's go on to
Spring Bay. This is the next caller. Spring Bay, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've got a foundation limestone block, probably built about 1850, and at the bottom of it now I see a cone of brown powder. And about the size of pebbles of grains of sand, but it kind of disintegrates my fingers.
Is this the mortar that's holding them together?
What's that?
Do we have deteriorating mortar between the blocks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a chink, you know, where it's come out of the hole in the wall.
Right. Okay, that does not sound like it is a wood-destroying insect or something like this. When we are working with these old mortars, we can't use today's mortar to replace them, in that the old mortar was much softer, and if we put a truly high-strength mortar in there, we're likely to cause some breakage of the stone because we have certain spots that will be very strong and other places that aren't. If you do any chinking and that sort of thing with a mortar, be sure you use at least a type O. The current mortar is usually type N. Type O, or there are some special mixes for over 100-year-old structures. I don't think you can buy them. You have to use a combination of lime, sand, and so on. And again, without my computer in front of me, I can't tell you what the proportions are, but I do have them. For doing that, but that is probably what is happening is we are getting deterioration of the mortar itself, and that mortar had an awful lot of sand in it, and so what you're seeing is the sand coming out of the mortar. This usually means that we've got moisture coming through that's dissolving the lime, and your basic problem is probably your foundation is getting more moisture next to it than it should.
All right. I had been told also that putting a copper ridge on top of a shake roof would help to keep the shake from deteriorating.
Yes, it tends to kill off the algae and so on that may grow on it. You can use a copper ridge, or there is a product called Shingle Saver, which is actually zinc, and zinc works well as copper, that you tuck under the top row of shingles. And one of the few benefits of acid rain is the fact that it washes the stuff down and kills off the algae. Shingle Saver is available at most building materials yards. As I say, it's zinc as versus copper. And it's just a matter of tucking it under the top row of shingles, or if you've got a real long roof, maybe halfway down again. But,
okay, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. LaSalle County is next here, line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I hope all this runs together like I think it's doing in my mind. The last efficient furnace we have was put in 1984, and we have aligned chimney, which is brick, and we have the runoff for the efficient furnace out on a plastic tube. And what I've asked about, and I've been told by friends that I wouldn't have to repair the chimney anymore, which somebody's always looking at to see if it's dropped anything. And I've had birds down there in the past too. Could you eliminate the furnace, the chimney, by removing it and putting in an electric water heater and an electric appliances for washing clothes. And I was wondering, is that that part of it? Can you answer that right off?
Well, yes, you can. Probably the most efficient thing to do is we now have direct vent gas furnaces and gas water heaters that just vent right out through the foundation.
Well, the thing is, that stuff is centralized in the basement. It isn't at a wall or anything. That doesn't make any difference.
No, no.
Oh.
You can.
And then I've also been
you can run at 20 or more feet.
Pardon?
You can run at 20 feet or so.
Oh, okay. And also, I've been told that to hang on to the basement gas stove, because if anything ever went wrong, you'd have that to fall back on in an emergency. And also, I've been to ask you, considering the next 20 years and no horrible things happening, just a regular run-of-the-mill, do you think, not being terribly efficient, I know, would it be better to go to electric heat all the way around
No.
and eliminate the natural gas?
No.
You think better go with what we've got?
I think as long as the natural gas supply holds out, and there's no question that we are running into a gas shortage.
Yes.
However, most of the electricity is generated by natural gas.
So you'd be hung up anyway.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So generally speaking, right now it is significantly more expensive to go to electricity than it is gas.
Well, what do you think about this 1984 efficient furnace? Being I'm having other things done, maybe would it be a good time to replace it with an even more efficient one now?
Well, 20 years old, you might get this. You might consider the possibility of the condition of the furnace. A good furnace man should be able to evaluate it for you.
I see. Uh-huh. Okay, Hank. Very nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let me just ask, when it comes to, for some reason, that line three didn't clear, chimneys. If you have your furnace and or your water heater venting into an old brick chimney, should it be lined?
Must have a liner.
Must have a liner. Okay.
Right. Otherwise, you will deteriorate the brick at a great rate.
Okay.
And it will do it from the inside out. So while it looks good from the outside, it will be collapsing on the inside.
Okay. And that's because the combustion gases that come out are a little bit acidic?
Yeah. Basically, you have carbon dioxide, which when you mix a little condensation with it becomes carbonic acid. We also probably have a little sulfur in there, so we get a little dilute sulfuric acid. And it doesn't affect the brick, but it eats the mortar.
Right.
So things can go to heck in a hurry with this. So it used to be when we had the old coal furnaces, they worked great because we always had a source of heat. The fire kept burning. When we go to a gas furnace where it goes off and on, the chimney has a chance to cool down. Next time it goes on, the moisture that is produced by burning the gas condenses in the chimney, and we start this acid process. So basically, anytime you have a gas appliance, it should be in a lined chimney.
All right. Even if it's just a water heater?
Absolutely. We've had situations where people have taken the furnace out and left the water heater hooked to it, and the chimney collapsed because of mortar damage.
All right. Well, let's continue here. Let's go next to Urbana, and it's line one. Oh.
Hi. Mm-hmm. We have a cinder block basement foundation that has, in part of it, what appears to be a kind of fine white mildewy substance.
Mm-hmm.
And that part of the basement is right under a dryer that vents into the garage. And we're wondering if the moisture from the dryer can be causing this substance and what it might be and how we should fix it.
Well, basically, this is what we call efflorescence. As you get moisture moving through the block, it dissolves a certain amount of lime and so on left over in the cement that we used to make it. And when the moisture evaporates on the inside, it leaves this salt-like substance on the surface. So that's a matter of moisture moving through. Now, whether the moisture is coming from your dryer or not, I don't know, but you definitely have moisture coming through that is causing this efflorescence. We don't like the idea of dumping dryer into the garage because, yes, we are creating a moisture problem out there. I almost question whether there's enough moisture to cause the problem you have. I'm suspecting that we are perhaps missing some surface drainage or something or other. And you have to remember that once you get water into a block wall, it can run 20 or 30 feet inside the wall, so that where it shows up on the inside has no resemblance to where it came in from the outside.
I see. So we should... what can we do to get rid of this material? Is it okay to just vacuum it up?
Yes, scrape it off. If you're going to, usually it will push paint off.
It's done that already.
Yeah, you'd have to use a cement-based paint, and it might that not there, but muriatic acid will take it off as well. But scraping it and vacuuming it up, fine. But basically, in order to eliminate it, we have to eliminate the water source.
So, well, we have had some moisture problems in the basement, and we intend to do some landscaping to get the water away from the house. Might that help?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Let's go again to another caller here. This is Urbana, and it's line number 2. Hello.
Yeah, I have 2 problems with water leaks, and I'm wondering how to figure out where it's coming from. One is I had a hardwood floor put in, and it's cupping, and it's near a sliding door. I had both the flooring person and the guy who put the subflooring in come and look, and the answer I got was that a series of tests with a humidity thing had to be, you know, measuring to try to figure out where the leak was coming from. But, you know, I don't know who to call, and I don't know if that's really the right way to figure out where this leak is coming from.
Is this over a basement or a crawl space?
I'm on the second floor, and our basement is on a slab.
Okay. In all probability, it is leaking around the flashing at the bottom of the sliding door.
Leaking around the flashing at the bottom. Okay, now, how do you figure that out?
Well, we do have moisture meters that measure the moisture level in the wood, and after a heavy rain we can check it, but it's a matter of looking and seeing what's there and what isn't there, as the case may be. But usually that kind of problem is a flashing leak at the bottom of the door. It actually can even be at the top of the door, and the water runs around the door frame and goes down.
Okay. And then, so it's basically a moisture meter, and you put it in at different heights around the door?
It has a set of little sharp pins, and you stick it into the wood, and it measures the moisture content of the wood.
And you do that before and after a rain?
We usually do it after, not before.
Okay. Well, I thought to see if there's a difference.
If we get the kind of reading I think we will get from that, it will definitely be an indication that it's always been there.
Okay. And then the other question is the building's on a slab, and my front door is down at ground level, and I moved in a year ago in the winter, and right after I moved in, the sidewalk heaved so high that I could not open the storm door. And then I found out that previously the owner had been required to that concrete jacking at that piece of sidewalk that was directly in front of the door. There's no porch or steps. It's just a slab and a sidewalk going directly to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of looks as though they had cut the concrete, because it had risen and it pulled the frame away. That's how it appears from what different people looking at it have told me. And so, like, now my frame is a half inch off, you know, falling forward where the door is, out toward the sidewalk. And anyway, well, I ground the sidewalk. Now I got to replace it. But the leak, you know, obviously hadn't been solved. And I'm thinking if I replace the sidewalk, it's going to heave again. So
well, basically, it's a matter of keeping the water away. What you're getting is frost heave.
Right. And it's really bad frost heave. It's several inches. So I'm thinking, how do I find out where the water's coming from?
Well, I can't diagnose that over the telephone, I'm afraid. Again,
you don't know how to figure it out?
Well, if seeing it, possibly, yes, but not over the phone. It's a matter of determining the overall drainage pattern, where the roof water is going, where the surface water is going, and yes, it may be necessary to break up the slab and put gravel in there that will drain and have a drainage from the, and if there's no water there, it won't frost heave.
So if I solve it by simply just making sure there's drainage, it doesn't matter if it's coming in?
Well, it isn't hurting anything that's coming in on a concrete slab. However, you probably have wood thresholds and so on, and yes, that will deteriorate.
Okay. So who do I go to then to find that out?
Well, give us a call at the office, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop because we've here come to the end of the time. I want to say thanks very much to our guest, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Again, he's been here monthly for a long, long time to do these shows. And
23 years, as I recall.
Well, let's do it for another few years. How about that? We very much appreciate you being here. Hank Spies, we do this every month on the program, always on a Monday, to give you a chance to call in, ask questions about home maintenance. We also want to thank Champaign Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Champaign Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Our program also is made possible with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Coming up a little bit later today on the Afternoon Magazine, a program from the archives, journalist Meredith Marin's son, Jesse, got into a lot of trouble with drugs and alcohol, and that sent her searching for answers to America's drug problem. She's the author of a book entitled Dirty, A Search for Answers Inside America's Drug Epidemic. On the Afternoon Magazine today, you'll hear an interview with Meredith Marin from the archives. That follows the 1 o'clock news. Celeste Quinn, the host of the show, it gets underway at noon with news from NPR, the BBC, AM 580, all here on AM 580. We'll have news for you from National Public Radio in just a couple of minutes. Before that, though, we have an update on the market, so please stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Illinois Farm Bureau, whose mission is to improve the economic well-being of agriculture and enrich the quality of farm family life.
Wheat and corn are up, soybeans down on the Chicago Board of Trade at this hour. Good morning, I'm Jay Pierce with this update on the market.